Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, I'm Clive Anderson. Welcome to the Best of My Seven Wonders Live. In each episode of this podcast, I get to talk to a special guest about his or her choice of the seven wonders of their world. Well, many of these we've recorded either face-to-face in a small studio or laptop-to-laptop online. But at last year's Edinburgh Festival Fringe, we recorded a bunch of seven wonders in front of a live audience, which added a new dimension to the whole experience. On this particular episode, we're looking back at some of the most wonderful wonders from the Edinburgh shows. Some guests chose some very personal wonders. For example, Kay Adams chose her parents. However, this first guest took a very different approach. Here to explain why windows are a wonder of the world is the comedian and self-styled German cultural ambassador, Henning Vane.
Make yourself at home. It's good to see you again. I have seen you occasionally before and enjoy working with you. Now, people will know a little bit about your backstory, but just in case they don't, if I remember rightly, you originally came to Britain from Germany to work at Wycombe Wanderers Football Club.
That's right.
What were you going to do there? You weren't going to be a player, were you?
No, sadly not. No, I was working in the marketing.
Yes.
And, stayed for a while. So essentially the story was, the company I've always worked with was in football / sports back home. And the company I was working for back home was about to go under.
Yes.
So, and I looked at my CV, it looked all right, but I didn't speak English other than very basic school English. So I thought, let's go to Blighty for a few months and learn the language. So I applied to all the 92 league clubs, arranged a few interviews, and then... with sheer luck, really, I ended up with a job at Wycombe Wanderers.
So it was a good one to practice your English on, because even Wycombe Wanderers is probably a bit of a challenge originally, isn't
it? Yeah, I think when I first bought a train ticket, I said, Wycombe.
Yeah. And their status has improved. So do you think that's down to you and the work that you did with them?
I wouldn't claim all the credit for it, but it certainly had to start somewhere. And, it coincided with me being there, I guess.
Actually, good. But you weren't a comedian... back home in Germany?
No. It wasn't really a stand-up scene as such. And here in Britain, I've been, for about a year and a half, and I walked past a pub and they had a sign out saying, tonight stand-up comedy, and I never heard of stand-up. I was intrigued. I said, I wonder what that is. So watched it, and I thought, and it was really a low-key affair, and I thought, I wouldn't mind giving that a go.
Yeah.
And then I just... treated the headline on the day, Gary Delaney, as it was, treated him to a beer. In return, he'd written me down a few phone numbers of open mic comedy nights.
Yeah.
Rang them, arranged a few gigs, and then without any master plan or anything, just had it as a hobby, and then it just got slightly out of hand.
No master plan. Okay. Yeah. Now, but that's quite a brave move, though, isn't it, to do comedy in... a language you were speaking by then, but
not really.
Sometimes comedy is the last thing, jokes are the last thing you can get in another language.
Yeah, but as long as you're the one telling them.
Yeah.
I don't mind why people laugh.
Yeah, okay. But you play on that stereotype that in Britain we're always congratulating ourselves on what a fantastic sense of humour we have, and other nations like Germany don't have such a good sense of humour. You play on that stereotype.
Germans like a laugh. The main difference is Germans laugh once the work is done.
Yes.
Rather than instead of. It's the main... Yeah. I mean, what I would say on that is... The sense of humour is probably similar. The main difference is the cultural importance of humour. Like in every job advert, it says you have to have a good sense of humour, or everyone will write in their CV they've got good sense of humour, and then you think, what's that got to do with anything? So, like the whole idea of self-deprecation, I find that hilarious. That no matter how badly you mess up in your line of work.
Yeah.
As long as you can tell the tale of your underachievement in an entertaining fashion.
Yes, yeah.
Everything's all right.
We weren't really going to concentrate on Boris Johnson this evening, so
yeah, but he's a fine example, because with Angela Merkel, they always say, oh, yeah, but she doesn't really have a great sense of humour. And then you think, but she's quite good at governing the country, really, all things considered.
Well, so let's go on to your wonders. And your first wonder is windows. Which I assume is the, you know, the thing we have in the wall to let the light in, rather than anything to do with Microsoft. But but that's all I know is you just put the word Windows up. So why Windows?
Because they're mad, aren't they?
They're mad.
It's like there is something there that you can see through.
Yes.
That's mad.
You're right. You're reacting to that as though you're a bumblebee. So something there, but we can't see how it's a magical thing then.
Yeah, anything. I mean, I come to that realization. The other day I was staying off the A38 at the Pit Stop Hotel near Axminster, and I was lying in the room looking round, and I thought, I couldn't make any of these things. So I looked at the window, the bed, chair. There was some print of some painting, and I thought, I wouldn't know how to do any of these things.
Yes, yes. I know exactly what you mean. And that's before you get onto the complicated things, like when you're on a computer, you click on an icon and it works. But if it stops working or it doesn't function, what made that work in the first place? Why can you click on a picture and it connects you with something?
It's mad, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, how do you plug something into a wall? And then there's electricity. What is electricity? I don't get any of that.
I assumed you might know something of that, but that's
maybe. But really, I mean, like, you know that movie where there is someone, I don't know how it goes exactly, but someone, the whole history of mankind is wiped out, and then one fella gets his hands on the back catalogue of all the Beatles songs.
Oh, yes, yes.
And then he sings all the Beatles songs, and everybody's like, oh, what a genius. And if I was in the same situation, I would be transferred back any number of years. Yeah. Well, I've seen it all, but I wouldn't know how to replicate any of it.
Yeah. Oh, no, I saw a documentary once set in sort of South America, and there was a a tribe of people and visiting, you know, people making the program, but sort of missionaries, things like that. And they said, oh, we have a very simple life here. And then they produced something. It was like a watch. They said, oh, that's fantastic. How do you make one of those? Of course, the person didn't know, and he had some jewellery. Well, how do you make that? And because we're so specialised in our civilization, there are lots of things going on, most of which we have no idea. All you know about now is how to tell jokes and maybe still marketing, but that's the end of it.
Yeah, that we're speaking into these.
Yes.
And somehow there's a sound being transported out there. Mad.
Yeah. I'm not sure it's mad. It's mystifying. It's a good thing.
Who come up with all that stuff?
Well,
honestly, I mean, I could be back there. I wouldn't be any help in any of it. And I even know what is possible, but I wouldn't know how to go about it at all. Look there at that wood that they've got over there, them benches. How are they so smooth? Who makes that? Who makes the machinery? Who comes up with the idea of saying, that is what I do, and then knows how to do it?
Well, the thing to be in a crisis, if you're with a group...
Look at them lights. What's that all about?
The thing to have with you in a crisis, I've been away with
the
people...
The stuff you wear. Yeah. Who made that? And I don't mean that as a diss, like, who made that?
Yeah. No, it's a fair point. It usually doesn't look great on me, clothing. But now we're going to move on to your next wonder. I'm not sure how far we're going. Your wonders seem to remain in close. Well, anyway, here we go. So mirrors is your next thing.
When you're fixing a Velux window, especially with a Pantol, we've got a Regent here, you need to make sure that when you position them, they suit the task.
Your second wonder takes us very firmly to America.
To where I grew up, yeah. So the first one I feel like people listening might go, oh, you like a Billy Bragg song. Wow, bold choice, man. This next one, I believe you're talking about the hot dog.
Yes, a hot dog from Rutt's Hut.
Rutt's
in
Hut.
Clifton, New Jersey.
Clifton, it is one of the seven wonders of my world.
Okay,
yes.
Now, yeah. I like to sort of mug up on the, you know, the wonders that they're giving me, but I didn't really attempt this.
Sure.
But, so you just fill me in. Is Rutt's Hut a big chain I should
no,
be aware of?
It's there's
just
one of them.
Mr. Rutt.
Jack
guy, Rutt.
There was an original guy. Yeah. I think his name, if I remember right, it was Abraham Rutt, founded it decades ago.
Yes.
And it's sitting in... If you all are familiar with New Jersey, you might know the stereotype is that it's kind of an ugly place.
Yes.
I, as a native and a resident, fight back against that. But this is exactly what you're thinking of in your mind.
Yeah.
It's sitting like off to the side of a highway.
Yeah.
And it's a hot dog, which is not a very classy food. Yeah. But I am a big fan of simple things done to perfection.
Right. Fair
and
enough.
And if you ever get a chance and you're in the States and you want to taste a hot dog done to the peak level that a hot dog can be, it is at Rutt's Hut in Clifton, New Jersey.
Yeah. So what is it? Is the actual hot dog that's good? Does he or they, do they stuff their own hot dogs or do they get a good supplier or is the way they cook it or what?
They deep fry. It is fried to the point where the skin is crackling.
Yeah.
It is as American as American gets.
Yeah. Well, I don't think anybody in Scotland is going to be attracted to deep fried, fried reconstituted meat product. You're going to have to go some to convince.
I was just saying to my wife earlier today, she was like, I've been here for 2 full weeks. She landed on Monday and she was like, is there any place that we can just get a salad? And I was like, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think they've brought salad to Scotland.
Yeah. You can get deep fried salad.
It's
tasty.
She got a salad that was covered in pickles. The whole salad was pickles.
Yeah.
She's like, what is this? Where's the lettuce? I said, I don't think it grows here. I don't think it grows in this soil.
This is a dreadful, dreadful stereotype. It is possible to have a salad. I had a salad earlier on today.
My
system couldn't cope with any more deep fried breakfast, which is the only meal I seem to have time for.
I'd like to claim that I'm just like playing into the stereotype, but we have been actively looking for salad and finding it very difficult to locate.
Oh, you'll be able to find. Go to Morrison's if you can find one of those.
Yeah.
Get your discount. But so where is the hut? So is it like a shack at the side of the road or is that a term for it's now an elaborate
building?
It is
a true hut. It is just a structure and a parking lot off the side of a highway.
Yeah.
One half of it is just hot dogs. The other is a bar where you can order a beer and a hot dog right there.
Right.
Both of them have what I think is the hallmark of very confidently prepared food, which is that the workers are not nice to you.
Yes.
They do not have time to waste on you. If you walk up and you're like, how should I? They just go, what do you want or get out of the way? And you can get it ordered. You can just order a hot dog and they'll cook it up. You can get a ripper, which is extra well done. Or you can get a cremator where that's where they just fry it forever.
Yeah.
I think the Scottish would really love that.
Yeah.
And then they make their own relish, which you can put on it. And it's perfect.
Like
it's perfect.
That reminds me, I was once in New York with my friend Dan Patterson, who invented Whose Line Is It Anyway, and he was in Sicily, knows everyone, and he insisted a group of us went to like a salt beef bar, which was famous for the rudeness of the waitresses.
Sure.
And that sort of camp was very, very Jewish kind of place. And come on, make it. And when we got there, everyone was being so polite to us, and they were young, pleasant servers, waiters, waitresses, and so forth. And we were kind of disappointed. And he raised this. He said, I don't understand. Every time I've been here before. And they literally went down to the basement. They brought up an old waitress. She said, what are you on? What are you talking about? I've not been rid of it. Have you decided? Why are you having a piece of it? And she did a whole performance for Dan.
USA. Yes. USA.
So how many times would you go to this? Is this like a once a week thing or once a year for nostalgic
purposes?
If
you ate at this place once a week, you would not live.
Yeah.
You would not. You'd be dead within 3 years of trying that. It was a rare thing growing up. It was a place that I heard about growing up. And when I got my license and had the freedom of an automobile, me and my friends sought it out immediately because we had heard so much of it.
All right.
Sadly, I did go vegetarian a few years ago.
Okay.
But I sit and I dream about this hot dog.
Yeah.
That there's another place called Jimmy Buff's in West Orange, New Jersey, which is a different style of hot dog.
Right.
A similar thing though, deep fried.
That's You're a hot dog expert, aren't you?
In New Jersey, we
all
take
breeds
our hot dogs.
Of hot dogs
yeah, we take
about,
them very seriously in New Jersey. We do.
So Rutt's Hut in New Jersey has been voted the best hot dog in America. Well, is it? I'm about to find out.
We're moving to your next wonder, which takes us a bit closer to home. And I'm not quite sure. Well, I'm guessing why this is on here. I can't work it out. The Old Shea Ground, Halifax.
Yes, this is quite a leap, I accept it. Yeah. Oh, Yorkshire people here.
Well, how lucky. There's a huge clack of Yorkshiremen and women in. Maybe from Halifax.
It wasn't luck. I know my audience. I sent out a massive questionnaire this morning.
Yes.
You can't be from Halifax. That's a huge coincidence. No one could have expected that.
So before we get to your word, when I first saw you performing, which was a long while ago, it was actually the Hay Literary Festival.
Oh, that's right.
Came on, and you were Welsh in those days.
Yeah, funny things happen over time.
Yeah. you performed as a Welsh person.
For the first few years, I did, and that was something which sort of hatched here again at the Fringe.
Yeah.
I won an open mic competition. It's a little bit like the Jack D thing, actually. Yeah. I just did it as a sort of Welsh persona on a whim, and then that started to go well, and then I began being introduced as the Welsh comedian.
Yeah.
And then I remember, I think all that made me stop it really was, well, firstly, Rod Gilbert came along, and I felt as if I was
stealing his
life.
There have been lots of Welsh comedians.
It's true. Yeah. There's been Max Boyce who's come and gone well before. I don't think he's not gone, actually.
No
one is quite that Welsh, I suppose. But it was also, actually, you might have even been there. There was basically what started to happen was that I appeared more and more on Radio 4 and other places where, specifically, there was an episode of Loose Ends where I was on, and you do your act. Plenty of people here will hear Loose Ends. You perform your stand up.
So.
Yeah, surely. So I did my 5 minutes of stand up with the other acts around the table, but then there's a bit where you just chat, and I had to maintain the Welsh accent during that, and this was happening more and more. I don't get a lift home with a comedian. Often when you start out, you're dependent on the other comedian. You go somewhere like Halifax, someone that drives everyone home.
Yeah.
And I end up talking for 3 or 4 hours in my adopted Welsh accent just to, thanks for the lift, I'll give you some petrol money. Yeah. And I start to think, well, this is, I'm living more in a lie than in reality here.
Right. Yeah.
And so there was a day when I went on Radio 4, something like Loose Ends, performed in my Welsh accent and then just spoke in my normal voice, and there were quite a lot of, I don't exactly complaints, but there were confused listener feedback after that. Yeah. And so I started to think it probably is time to retire this. Otherwise, I'll be in Jack D's situation. Hmm. I'll still be doing it. It was a very easy accent for me to adopt because a lot of my family are from Wales, but you can't, you don't want to do that for your whole life.
No. Okay. Well, I'm disturbed. You obviously remember being on Loose Ends. You can't remember if it was me or Ned Sheeran presenting at the time, but it was fair enough. And that bit when a comedian did a few minutes, I got rid of on that because I thought that was the worst gig to give a comedian to perform to. It might be about 20 people.
I think I did it first was definitely Ned Sheeran because I couldn't believe I was meeting him. And then I think it was with you. And you're right. By then it was just a chat.
Yes.
And it was much better. Yeah. Yeah. Nothing's odder really than doing stand-up to literally 6 people. Yeah. And there's always a band there as well.
Yes.
You see the band with the best one in the world are probably not going to laugh much. So they're tuning their instruments.
Well, we often have, you know, musicians from Mali or Japan or somewhere, so they're not always the most receptive audience.
They might not be big on a joke about the Big Breakfast or something.
So I think your mother's Welsh, and
I grew up in Bristol, in fact, almost in Wales.
Yeah.
Although an important distinction as far as Bristolians is concerned.
But Bristolian accent is a popular accent for comedians and comedy as well. So you could have switched between the two. You could have done a bit more. More Bristol, and then
that's right. Yeah, yeah. Because my dad is neither from Bristol nor Wales, I didn't really. I think my accent sort of comes from him. I didn't really pick up much of a natural. There's occasional Bristolian tang that comes in. If I'm in Bristol, I become more Bristolian.
Oh, of course,
and if I'm at the football or doing some other Bristolian thing, I suddenly, to a degree, which is quite embarrassing, actually.
All right. Well, we've got to get back to Halifax, though. So this is not Bristol. It's not Wales. It's not Edinburgh. You haven't mentioned Halifax until we get to this one, but why?
In fact, my experience of performing in Halifax has been quite limited. I've only done 2 shows there. The first one was with Russell Howard, and both of us were very young comedians at the time. And it was one of my first ever gigs in Yorkshire, in fact. And I had this idea in my head that it'd be rough, that I would be regarded with suspicion as a southerner. So I was pacing up and down, thinking, "Don't let yourself down." In those days, you do a lot of early career, you do a lot of sort of rougher club gigs as well. I can't remember the name of the place, but it did seem quite intimidating. So it's just like walking up and down, getting more and more frantic. My name was called, walked on thinking, be confident, look rough, but in fact I'd given myself a nosebleed and it was all over me. And so I walked on stage, felt the audience gasp, looked down, absolutely covered in blood, and it was quite a memorable gig.
Yes. And they wouldn't know whether you'd been hit as you came up, or it was part of a comedy
skit.
It's a bit like his Welsh accent. He puts it on sometimes.
I did nearly claim it had happened on the way there, like comedians do. Yeah.
Yeah.
In the end, almost the whole gig was about that. And by the end, I think I'd convinced them it was real blood. Mm. Not the sort of act you can replicate many times, though, I have to say. The Shea Ground is now called the Shea Stadium. It was a football ground in Halifax, Halifax Town's stadium.
Yes.
And I'm an enormous football fan, but I have specific enthusiasm for old football stadiums. Very often I will go and visit the football ground of a town. I mean, even if there's not a game there, just to see it.
Yeah.
And obviously, a lot of stadia now are built out of town and they're a bit more, not exactly soulless, but they're sort of bigger and more corporate seeming. But there are still a few of these grounds around that are kind of crumbling and have old style terraces and old advertising, but also have a very large collection of football programmes. It's the same sort of appeal, this taste of a world that's gone, you know, cigarette adverts or adverts for coach tours, long defunct
Bovril,
all this sort of thing. I have a real sentimental fondness.
Peeing down the terraces at half time.
Yes, weeing in someone else's pocket. Yeah, the golden days. Yeah.
Literally.
I took my son, who's now 12, but when he was about 8, I took him to a football match at a non-league ground where you still could get Bovril.
Yeah.
And he asked what it was, and I said, it's a beef drink, basically. And he literally just wouldn't believe me.
No.
I had to get one to prove it to him.
Melted cow.
Yeah. Exactly. This is melted cow. Yeah. One or a Coke.
Yeah.
And this already is no longer there. It's been rebuilt. But when I first went to Halifax to play, it was about 2010 or something. Halifax's club had gone out of business and the ground was just there, you might remember, just a ghost of a football ground that had been there for 70, 80 years. And also it was snowing, it was December, so I stood, it was an obviously mad thing to do, no one had visited for years, but I went out in the snow and just stood on this ancient terrace thinking about the people that congregated there for decades, generations of people, many of them, to be fair, in flat caps. And I felt... that's what's in it for me, really, with old stadiums, the sense of how much... Yes. The same way some people feel about visiting a Roman amphitheatre, and I do, actually. The reason I chose it is, as I say, it's now a bit rebuilt. Halifax, as a club, are back on their feet.
Yeah.
So now you would just see a sort of generic lower league ground there. But for about 10 years, there was this, as I say, phantom place there, and I'd happened to be there during that window. So it's a sort of... It's one of my seven wonders because it no longer exists in that form, basically.
Can I just check with our, party in from Yorkshire? Does any of this make sense? Is there a ground? Is it crumbling? Or what's happening to it now? Yeah. Just like you said.
Yeah.
Oh, right. I didn't want it.
They managed to reform the club with mostly public, like fans' money, actually. So it is a happy story.
It's back in business again.
They came back from the dead as a club. But obviously, it was kind of magical to see this this abandoned football ground. Mostly they get sold off and turned into IKEAs and things like that. But if you can grab them, there's sometimes a ghost ground there just for a couple of years. And it is quite a thing if you're a football fan to observe.
I shouldn't put in my stories as well, particularly, but it did remind me of I once went on a trip with my father to Glen Buck in Ayrshire, which used to have a... Does anyone know about the Glen Buck cherry pickers? Yeah. Oh, right, there you are. See, so to give you an idea of what the sort of holidays I had as a child...
They were labour, basically.
No, we stayed. Me and my father stayed with my ex-infant school teacher, Mrs. Willock, who lived in Alloway in Ayrshire. I don't know why we spent some time... She was retired.
I was going to ask.
No, I know, but it's a complicated story. Anyway, we went on a trip to see Glen Buck, which used to produce... It was a mining village, and it produced loads and loads of great footballers, including, as it happens, Bill Shankly, who are the Liverpool manager, and his brother, who was another manager. But there, all we could see was a field. The mining thing was gone. There was a school still being used to score store straw and agricultural products like that. And the whole village, apart from three houses, have completely disappeared. And I was... Well, this is where all these footballers came from. Most of them I had never heard of, but so that for me lodges in my mind as it was all misty. You know, a man came out of the mist and said he remembered the Shankleys, and they all lived over there, and that crumbled down.
He would have been paid to do that.
Yeah,
he said it three times.
Has anyone else gone to see Glenn Buck? Anyone? As we had a chance if we had a party from Glenn Buck as well as.
It would start to look suspicious.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Well, your next one is, well, I think it's personal to you, but I suppose it's general application. Well, you've put it down as good parents, mine in particular.
Yeah, so. Well, sadly, my parents have passed away within the last sort of 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
I suppose this is something that I reflect on more as you get older.
Sure.
In that I was so fortunate with my parents, you know. You know, just hardworking, decent, loving, supportive people.
Yeah.
And the more, you know, I proceed through life and you meet, thankfully in our job, we meet lots of different people, which
yes.
is one of the great privileges of it.
Sure.
And you meet some wealthy people, famous people, talented
yes.
people, you know, whatever.
Some lovely people and some pretty unpleasant people.
Yeah. Exactly. Yes, you do.
I'm sorry about that, but you just had to come here.
No, you're absolutely right. And a lot of people are chasing fame or money or
yeah.
whatever. And I do have come to the conclusion that the greatest gift you can have in this world is great parents.
Mm. What did they think of you as you progressed onwards? You went to university to study. You told
yeah.
us politics and economics. Did they think, yes, good, hard-working subjects, those. You'll either be doing something to do with business, or it could be, you know, public life. And
well,
but then you said, no, I'm gonna, you know, be in broadcasting. Was that a
Yeah, but I mean, that was a great thing. I mean, they hadn't been to university. I think one of my dad's sisters had gone to university, but that wasn't really their thing.
Yeah.
But actually, the great thing about them was that they didn't have an expectation for me. They certainly had an expectation, but it was whatever I wanted to do.
Yes.
I mean, they weren't, you know, fussed as what I was doing, as long as I was doing well, I was happy,
yeah.
and to have that level of support.
Yeah.
Was amazing for me. I mean, whatever I had done,
yeah.
well, I say that, my mum might not have been happy. She was maybe a bit more ambitious than my dad, to be fair. He'd have been happy whatever I'd done.
Well, I look back to see how many different programmes you've done, which is a huge list of things. It looks as though you must have been pretty successful straight away and straight into making a name for yourself.
It doesn't feel like that at the time, does it?
No,
you're just sort of climbing a ladder. I was so lucky. I did get a good break straight out of university. I got an internship, they call it now, but a traineeship with Central Television in Birmingham.
Right.
So my first job was right in television, and we got a fabulous training.
Yes.
And so many young people will now say to me, who are studying media or whatever, which wasn't as common when I was at university, how do I get into this business? How do I get into the business? And the level of training that I got on a decent pay
yeah.
Just isn't available to young people now. I mean, they're having to work for buttons, or they're going to London, they can't afford the accommodation, etc.
I think the law now requires them to be paid something.
Yeah.
Because it was a nice little number to give your internship. You come and like a Victorian way of getting people started.
Well, yeah, but people who didn't come from, you know, families who had that kind of resources would find it very difficult to get into television or journalism. Right. Whereas I was paid a proper wage, you know.
Yes. And Birmingham, was that a culture shock going from Rangemouth to Birmingham, or Edinburgh to Birmingham?
I loved Birmingham. I really did. I didn't when I first got there, and I can remember that thing, sort of getting in my little battered car with all of my goods in the back, you know, everything there, probably a ghetto blaster on the back shelf or whatever. And I drove to Birmingham on my own, first time I'd ever been there.
Yeah.
And it's not the prettiest city when you arrive.
But well, apparently it is. We've nothing but beauty in Birmingham over the Commonwealth Games. Well, yeah. The best city on earth.
It is a transformed city.
Transformed city,
but
yes,
back then, mid-80s, it wasn't so fine.
Lots of more canals than Venice.
Has it?
Yes. Only
really?
Venice has gondolas and Birmingham has supermarket trolleys.
So and so I parked at a car park and I thought, what the hell have I done? You know, it's a big move, isn't it?
Yeah.
Your first move away.
Yeah.
But I quickly loved it. I really loved Birmingham. I loved the people. Central was a fantastic company to work. My first job was on a children's news programme, and the main presenter was an Irish wolfhound who farted a lot. So that kind of...
taking dogs off the list now.
Yeah. That kind of put me in my place.
Yeah.
And then I had a sort of break in that I interviewed Margaret Thatcher when I was about 24.
How did you get on?
It was the most terrible interview that has ever been broadcast.
Oh, come on. I can match any of the...
No. Sure, yeah. No, believe me. I win this one. I win it because I was too young. I was completely wet behind the ears. She was, whatever anyone thinks of her politics, she was an incredibly smart and...
Formidable
woman. And when I say she wiped the floor with me, it was quite interesting the way she did it, in that she completely infantilized me. You know, so she was nice to me. Like, she was super nice to me. She was sort of straightening my collar and saying, "Oh, your mum will want you to look smart," and all of this kind
come
of thing.
Come on, dear, come out with your
question.
Exactly like that.
And showing me round 10 Downing Street, because it was in 10 Downing Street.
Oh, wow.
And she showed me all the portraits. She answered the door.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine that happening now? A big policeman at the door, and I'm knocking on the door, you know, "Is Margaret there?"
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And she opened the door.
Fantastic.
And then immediately started sort of dusting me down, and she must have known. So by the time I was sitting in a chair ready to interview her, I was like, ah.
So you did sort of like one of those 1950s interviews. Tell us about how the job is so difficult.
Exactly. It was an hour-long interview, and I think I asked two questions.
Yes.
The first one, and I sneaked in one in the middle, and then she talked, and that was it. And I was papped out.
So did that give you the taste for political interviewing, or did it put you off and think, oh?
Okay, it was a one-off experience. I really did want to be a political journalist.
Yes.
That was my original thought. But I actually, as part of that, spent quite a lot of time at Westminster as a young woman in those days. And I thought, no, I don't really want to be part of this. It wasn't an atmosphere that I found particularly...
No.
Impressive, to be honest. It did feel like a boys' club.
So, talking about boys' club, but then a girls' club, you do Loose Women, which is a different sort of programme. I mean, there's a huge number of different people have been on it, but you've been, not a constant, but you've had a lot of time on it for length of time.
Yeah, I think
A different form of broadcasting? Is that different skills, would you say?
I don't think it is, you know. I'd be interested in your thoughts on that. I mean, obviously from the outside, people see serious programmes and silly programmes and whatever, but the job is the job.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is to keep a conversation going, to bring people in, to keep some flow to it, to try and make sure that you allow everyone to show the best of themselves.
Yeah.
And, well, to be fair, that's not the job in political interviewing, though.
No, but, you know...
To a certain extent.
The thing that I would think, just looking at it from... There's lots of people, you know, is it four of you there or five? And then a guest comes on and you might have a question and you just think of a follow-up question, and then everyone else has... coming piling that in is, and the conversation goes in a completely different
that is
direction.
Bloody annoying, I have to say. It really is, but that is the gig, you know. So, and
Janet Street Porter's an old friend of mine.
Is she?
But I should imagine she's probably a bit of a challenge if you're, because she occasionally will express an opinion in the course of.
She will. It's funny, I should have put her down as one of my wonders, Janet. You know, she is a remarkable person, and she's not easy. She'll say she's not easy. Fuck off! Yeah. I mean, it's only 8:30, Janet. Yes. Please calm down, you know. Yeah. And she won't do this, and she won't do this, and she won't do that. But then...
That was the first thing she said to me, actually. I'd written some ad-libs for her, some things for her to say in a programme. She said, who wrote this fucking crap? Said, well, it's was me, Janet, but if you want to do it better. But then she commissioned me to do a documentary series around the world, and I've worked for her on other things. And so I'm a big fan of hers.
Well,
I can see being on a screen with her.
Yeah. You've got to know how to euphemistically tickle Janet's tummy.
Yes.
I would say. And you know, there are certain... I handed you that one.
Can I be left to tickle the tummy of the cockapoo while you do...
Lady Thatcher, the Swedish people know you very well as a former Prime Minister of Great Britain. When I speak to men, they very rarely like to admit that they have power, and even less that they enjoy it. What about you?
But to be Prime Minister is to exercise power. You must be conscious of that responsibility, conscious that there are people who don't necessarily...
Your first wonder that you have supplied to me and I took down the other evening is your grandmother's radiogram.
Yes.
So why is that a wonder of the world?
Well, because that actually did get me started doing vocal impressions.
Yes.
So we can kind of stay on the same sort of theme because...
Well, you can do an impression of your grandmother, like, and we won't know this right or wrong unless Margaret Thatcher was your grandmother.
Gosh, it sort of almost felt like that growing up in the 80s. Yeah. It's like she was a sort of aunt, you know, a sort of stern aunt.
Yeah.
Ooh, I keep away from. But
so where was your grandmother, or where was her radiogram?
Well, this particular grandma was in Hull.
Yeah.
And when I was very little, I don't know if we touch on that with one of them, because I've forgotten what they are now that I told you, but we came back from having emigrated to New Zealand, and we stayed at my great-grandmother's for a while, and the radiogram was there. And of course we didn't have telephones or iPads I didn't even have any toys, because, you know, we didn't really bring much over from New Zealand. So as adults just used to talk to each other, and there was no Teletubbies, I'd just sit and I'd play with this radiogram. And I was about 4, and I was taught, you know, you just put it on there and you put the needle on there and then it plays. And she had such a vast collection. And so you sort of imprint when you're that age. And I think for me, particularly with accents, having my mum being from the south, my dad being from the north, and then learning to speak in New Zealand, where they'd emigrated to from Hull, then coming back. And there's all these influences. So my mind was very open to ways of communication and the way that listening out for the way people speak. You've got to tune into an accent, really, haven't you? You know, especially when you're up here. And in Glasgow, for some reason, I seem to only be good at Glasgow.
Oh, okay. Well, that'll make you popular, then, obviously. Because you can be making fun of it.
Maybe so. Yeah. Lorraine Kelly, you know, she's actually, I think she's from Dundee.
Yes.
But, you know, it kind of sounds a bit Newton Bairns or somewhere like that. I think that's
is impressive, isn't it? You're doing
Southside or
different localities within various cities.
No, Mulgaia definitely sounds like that. Yeah, yeah. Everything's so wonderful. Oh, it's so nice. It's so nice. Anyway,
she is very lovely, isn't she?
She is.
Yeah.
And she's, no, definitely. And you're very nice. And so are you, and you, and
yeah,
you.
Yeah,
and you,
yeah.
And you. So this record, this collection of records, there was, you know, all kinds of people in there. There was Shirley Bassey, that was my favourite.
All right.
And I have nothing. She had so many of her records. She absolutely loved her. And then I think there was Cleo Lane, who seemed to do sort of normal straight songs with a slight London accent. So she'll say,
He was beautiful from the moment I saw him.
And then she suddenly sort of, jazz confused me, you know.
You were lapsing into Bruce Forsyth there with her accent.
Oh, yeah. Playing your cards, right? You get nothing prepared. Oh, they're not bad.
Yeah.
They're warming up and they should be all right. Stay on for me.
Yeah.
I'm on straight after this.
So, what era are we talking about with this radio? What sort of era of music? Those are timeless performers, those ones. I can't get my head around when this was.
Yes, well, she had a lot of records from the 60s, but this was the 70s. This would have been, I was born in 72, I don't mind telling you.
Yeah.
50 this year, which I'm all right with, actually. I'm finding it quite empowering.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure I will when I get there. So that's...
Love it.
I don't want to concentrate too much on the radio, but I have a picture because when I was growing up, I don't want to play the stereotype, but I had a Scottish father and we didn't waste our money on things such as buying, you know, records, you know, 45s or anything like that. But eventually my mother prevailed upon him and except when we borrowed them, we never had one of those sort of dance set record players that everybody else in the world had. But eventually my mother got it's like a sort of coffin. It was like a tea coffin. It had a record player in one bit and a radio in another bit. Did anybody have one like that? We thought it was fantastic. And then I would play sort of dodgy records on there that I tried to make sure my mother didn't hear the lyrics, because even then they were slightly rude ones, you know.
What kind of thing?
Well, just the records of the day. I may be thinking of one Rolling Stones record in particular. Ah. Luckily, she couldn't make out what it... it's called Star Star when they put it, but it's slightly rude than that. Anyway, you can look it up one day. I don't want to go on that, but so that's the sort of thing, a sort of piece of furniture that your grandmother could play her records on.
Yes, it was a sort of teak thing.
Yes,
and she had all the ones from the 60s, like Helen Shapiro and Sandy Shaw and Lulu, of course. Lots of 70s, Barbara Streisand, you know, that sort of thing was kind of getting a bit more, that was a bit more cool for my gran.
All right. So Lulu, can you do Lulu? Are you...
Well, a little bit.
That's a cruel one, because that's straining your voice early on for your show later on.
I haven't done my warm-up yet.
Oh, no.
I should be doing that now.
Well, treat this as your warm-up. Every now and then, just throw in a vague sound and we'll understand. Anyway, so it's a radio, we're going to move on, but does that bring back happy memories of your grandmother? Was she a lovely, warm woman? And
yes.
And that's an interesting story. You emigrated from Hull to New Zealand and then back again.
And yes.
What didn't you like, or what didn't your parents like about New Zealand?
Yes, well, I was only four, so I was having a great time out there. But
there may be some New Zealanders in tonight.
Yeah, are there?
Well, or not, as the case may be.
That's fine then. We can talk about sheep and stuff. No,
they've said yes or some other combination.
Well, the most famous New Zealand person, my riddles, are Jacinta Ardern, who likes to talk about building big bitter. like a sort of New Zealand Janet Street Porter.
They seem to have decided on the journey over they will swap all the vowels to one on. And it's not much better, not much worse, but it's just confusing. Who decided to do that?
No, it's like that awful advert for the decking.
Yes.
Yes.
New Zealand's a pretty young country, and as a result, we don't really have regional accents. Except for one region in the bottom of the South Island.
Your next wonder of the world. Now, this is an interesting one. Nobody else has chosen this. I've done about, I must be getting on for 60 of these now. So there's some overlaps, especially here in Edinburgh. But nobody else has chosen oat milk. Oat milk.
Oat milk?
Yes.
Yeah. As I mentioned already, I'm a vegan.
Yes.
But I like a brew.
Yes.
I really like a brew. Yeah. And soya milk is a bit... Almond milk is terrible for the environment.
Oh,
the amount
dreadful.
Of water it uses almond milk.
Yeah.
Coconut milk is just coconuts in your brew,
it's
isn't
sweet,
it?
Sweet, isn't it?
And it's a taste of coconut.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is not what you want in a cup of tea.
No.
And I didn't have a cup of tea for about 3 years because none of the milks work well.
Right.
And then one day I just thought, I'll try oat milk, Clive. I just thought, I'll try oat milk.
Give it one last chance.
And I love tea. Yeah. I do. I drink Assam. Yes. I'm a big fan of the Assam tea.
Oh, I say Assam, I drink Assam tea. No, but...
I drink Assam, Assam, which is one of only two places in the world where tea grows naturally.
All right.
And it's beautiful. I've tasted the tea as well in Sri Lanka.
Yes.
I've been to the tea farms and done the tea tasting.
So you're a real... Yeah. But if I sorry to pick you on these minor things, but along the way, but you didn't have to give up tea because you couldn't find the milk. You just drink tea without milk in it.
But it makes your cheeks go.
Is that a bad thing, Justin?
It's a velvet fist, isn't it? Yeah. It really is.
I don't know what you're talking about now, but that's...
The oat milk that I got, I've fallen in love with it.
Yeah.
And so much to the point now that in our house, we only have oat milk and I'm the only awkward person. Everybody likes it. It works. I implore you, it's good for the environment, good for your health.
Yes.
It's good, very good for your oat milk.
Now, odd enough, I was reading a paper today, actual physical paper, The Times, and there was an article about a machine you can get to turn, you get oats and you put it into the machine, it turns it into oat milk.
Yes.
I'm making this up. Does anyone read The Times?
It's called a blender.
No, but this... Well, that was kind of the point of the article that eventually they said, well, you could do it with anything. But there's a special... Obviously, with this, it's one of these things you buy and you use twice and then you put away. But it might exactly suit you. It makes a lot of noise, but you do get milk, about a handful of oats and a bit of water.
A pound from the shop.
Yes.
It's really nice. Have you got an air fryer?
No, but that was mentioned in the article. But it sounds like a good idea, though. But
they're great. Has anybody else got one?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Great. Keep it out all the time.
Yes.
The trick to an air fryer is not to think of it as a fryer, but as a mini convection oven. Because it heats up really quickly.
Do you do the advert on the telly? That sounded so good. That's a voiceover. Just think of it as a mini convection oven.
I do some voiceovers. I used to do Piers Morgan's Life Stories with Best Western Hotels. Hotels with personality. So I've done quite a few of these.
But it sounds good, your
my
voice.
My latest one I've got I got there and they went, it's just a small radio campaign. Is it all right? And I went, yeah. And I got the script and this is what I had to say. I went, a pound. What can a pound buy you these days? Well, at Fishing Republic, it can get you half a pint of maggots. And then it goes, so don't delay. Rush down to Fishing Republic in Barnsley.
Yeah.
I'm selling maggots in Barnsley. I think this is not what I got into show business for.
But it's a paid gig. What the hell? Yeah. Where were we? Oat milk. Yeah. So that's, yes, you're just reminding us again, of course, if you're vegan, there's lots of things that you can't have because if you're going to be absolutely strict about it.
I am strict. I don't eat honey. You know, some people eat honey if they're vegans. I don't.
Because it's cruel to the bees to have them beavering away not beavering away, but working away to make honey.
Busy as bees.
And you nick it off them. But
And then the bees die. You know, people don't forget this. Your bees are only there because you're having the honey.
Don't they get a bit of oat milk or something to eat to keep them going and you have their honey?
Yeah, so I'm triggered by your stuff about bees.
Yeah. You can't have Lee and Perrin's Worcestershire sauce because there's a little bit of anchovy in.
Not a little bit, that's what it is.
Oh, is it mainly?
What Lee and Perrin's is barrels of anchovies turned for decades to get an anchovy thing. What I have is Henderson's.
Henderson's.
Has anybody had Henderson's?
Yeah, that's Yorkshire, isn't it?
Henderson's. Yeah, Sheffield, stronger northern.
Yes.
But it's exactly the same thing.
But no anchovies.
Here's one that'll blow your mind. Figs.
Figs, because there's too many insects in it.
No, because every fig starts with a dead wasp.
Right.
The wasp goes into the flower grows round it.
Yeah.
And so there you go.
So that stops it being vegan, even though Dame Nature has just come up with this idea of the way of getting a fig.
Dame Nature.
Or God, I don't know who you want. Charles Darwin, somebody has come up with this.
Yeah, yeah.
Some force has produced this thing.
No, so what they do is they get a polytunnel and they put a load of...
Dead wasps in.
No, alive wasps.
Yes.
I'll be honest with you, it's not really a deal breaker. I don't remember last time I ever thought, ooh, I'll just go a fig.
Yeah. But that's very strict, though.
I check it all.
That's strictly come vegan, isn't it? That's,
I do, because I think if you're gonna do it, you might as well do it properly. I do it for the ethical reasons.
But you're going to the back history of the fig. You're not actually eating something, but you just know that in its past, when it was a flower.
There are some people, I think, are they called the Jain people?
Oh, Jains, yes.
Yeah, they want to eat anything that's ploughed.
Yeah, because you're churning up the worms and things.
And you're using a horse to pull it and things like that, so.
Well, not these days, to be honest. You have. Yeah. You're not keeping up with agricultural methods, are you? Do you want to try listening to the archers?
What do they measure tractors' power in?
Horsepower.
There you go.
But that's just an arbitrary measure. It's got nothing to do with it.
I feel like when I have a conversation with you, Clive, I want to say, I put it to you. Which nobody ever says, do they, in legal circles?
No, sometimes you do, but it's not as often it happens in fictional works.
Yeah. Is it not true that?
Yes. Yeah. we've got one final wonder. Whiskey distillery tours.
Yes.
Now, most people would end that, just whiskey, but you actually like the distillery tour. Is it because it's the process you like, or is it the free whiskey at the end, or what?
Well,
the smell, somebody suggested.
The smell is lovely.
They've worked you out that you're a smeller.
It's the reason I elaborated on it was I made the effort to get into whiskey. I think when you first try it, it's pretty repellent. The smell can be quite, it can take you back. And if you're not sure what you need almost in a way, you need to be taught how to taste it properly.
Yes.
Whenever I go on, if we go on holiday to Italy, we'll go to like a vineyard or something.
Yeah.
Or if you go to France, you'll go to like, cheese. And you're like, every time I come to Scotland, this place is full of whiskey distilleries.
Yes.
Why don't I make the effort? So after every Edinburgh festival, I go on a different whiskey distillery tour.
All right.
And the first one I did was in Edradour in Pitlochry.
All right.
It's the smallest distillery in Scotland. Okay. And you have to hike up through the woods past a waterfall called Black Spout. It's beautiful.
All right.
And it's this tiny distillery there. And the whiskey distillery tours are the best value for money thing you will ever do. It's like £10.
Yeah.
And they show you how it's all made and you get loads of free whiskey.
Yes.
And they tell you how they make it. So when you're there and you're surrounded by like the beautiful Scottish water and the sun and all that and the history of it all and they're saying, you can taste like butterscotch. If you just sit at home with a bottle of Teachers, you're not going to taste coffee and cinnamon and stuff like that. But when you're there and you're surrounded by it, that's the thing that gets you in.
Yeah.
And also, I think it's like really nice to learn about the history of areas. And often, breweries or distilleries have a lot of social history and they tell you about the changing laws of the area. Or often these things were made to get around legislation. I'm sort of interested by stuff like that. And I love getting drunk.
Have you ever been to the island of Islay, like the most southerly of sort of Hebridean islands?
But I'd love to go.
It's flat, but every village is the name of a whiskey. And so you could spend, a good 10 days there just travelling around from village to village. It's all that peaty kind of whiskey they do there. So
I'd love to do it.
Yeah.
I just love the whole thing. And then what they do is, I'll go with my girlfriend and her parents, and they don't really drink whiskey. So they get like three samples each. They don't want this. I'm just like leathered by the end of it. It's just like, you just leave so happy. It's great.
So is that all right when you're with your girlfriend and her parents, and you say, we're going on another whiskey distillery. we did say, it might be 10 years ago now, we don't actually like whiskey. So all we're doing is carrying a drunk home.
When you put it like that, it does sound less good for them.
You could go to the Highland Spring bottling plant for a tour of water.
Yeah, you know what?
Or the waterworks.
We actually went past it on the way to, and I was like, do you reckon they'd let us in? And they thought that was a step too far.
Yes.
I would love to go to the Highland Spring bottling plant.
Yeah, but it's only going to be a pipe coming out of the ground with the bottles lined up.
But I would still, to be around that much water. and a brand, I mean, I can't tell the difference obviously between Evian, Volvic, Highland Spring if I'm drinking it. But I do, if I'm in like W.H. Smith's in London, I will buy Scottish. I'm like, well, that's from Scotland, so I'll favour that over the French stuff, even though it's probably all the same.
When I've been away filming sometimes and doing documentaries, a late night game we got into playing was lining up and do a blind tasting of whiskies. And the great thing is, if you do them neat and you really don't, after the first one, you can't tell the difference in anyone. Yeah. So you can put a scotch in there, you know, bourbon. You can even throw in a brandy and people can't tell the difference. And scotch flavour mostly comes from the barrels. It's this aged, which comes from the sherry or the bourbon or whatever else has been in it. So distilled spirit is clear and tasteless. Yes.
Yeah. And that's where it gets its colour. So the ones that are done in sherry casks have that lovely... Yeah. Oh, they do them in red wine casks, and then they have that lovely dark red, and you can taste the sweetness. I met a guy in America who told me that they... I mean, I realise I'm going to... That makes it sound like he was like some shaman. Yeah. All he did was tell me that there's a whiskey company that takes the barrels out on the sea, and they're at sea all year round, and they think that a bit of the salt air gets in, and you can taste it. Now, that could just be marketing rubbish.
Yeah.
But I probably will buy a
bottle. Look, Matt, we've come to the end of your wonders. We've come to the end of our time. I haven't really dealt with much with your whole range of impersonations. When you do Spitting Image, what are the voices that you do? What's your favourite ones? And are they people who are about to leave the political scene worrying you? Do you do Boris? You do Boris.
I do Boris Johnson, yes. Yeah. So, and I prefer... Doing them on Spitting Image is good fun, but I prefer doing them... Like, doing them live is far more... even the way that they move. I want to be treated fantastic. Interviewer. Yeah. And the way that... You know, all the different things that you notice about it. In a way, it's a form of observational comedy.
Yeah.
And the way that when he's asked a question, that initially incredulous, but you're lying to the public. Yeah. Oh, come on. That sort of fake incredulity. He has that. I only noticed that recently. Does that the big wide? We're going to get on with leveling up, go fast. And yes, the party opposite, the Putin lockdown, loving Captain Hindsight, the party opposite. Yes,
it's mad to watch. Yeah. So, I mean, he is a bit of a gift, isn't he? Because he's kind of a caricature of a caricature in the first.
I mean, I do Trump as well, as I said earlier. I do Rishi and I do.
And what's Rishi? Rishi's quite. He's pretty smooth, isn't he? I mean,
well, he is. I mean, Rory Bremner's made this point before. A lot of them sound like Tony Blair.
Yeah.
So it's almost like making an Italian meal. You have to start with onions and garlic, and like Blair is your base stock.
Okay.
So, I mean, there's all sorts of things that you realise about him, Clive. Yes, it's right, by the way, that we invested not only in the NHS, but we reformed it. And. Sort of have moments. So that's sort of Blair. And then Rishi is kind of almost like a sort of helium version, but we smashed it. There's a kind of nasal, I want to make it a safer society. There's a bit of a lisp there. And he's totally pathetic. We smashed it. You're that sort of weird, sad kind of guy. Keir Starmer, actually, you know, it's always the ones that people say, they're kind of harder to do.
Yeah.
Or people assume they will be. In a way, that's more fun, because then you're the person who's noticing stuff. With Boris, a million people have noticed something about him. With Starmer, he sounds a bit like Ed Miliband. Yeah. So, you know, Clive, you know, Ed Miliband, you know, come on. It was very much like that. The way he was mad how funny he was, actually. And Keir Starmer has a bit of that. Yeah. But Clive, I've got to... tell you. And the phrase, he always has his right hand out, actually. Yeah. At the Metropolitan Police. If you want to get a Keir Starmer, because it's got enough vowels to get the block nose, but then it's the staccato.
He's holding his voice back in a sort of way, with the way you're. That's a good observation I can now see. Because when impersonators do people, we now realise what we've been listening to all this time. The skill you've got is to notice it and encapsulate it. That's. Sorry, I'm turning it to Boris. And that thing you did with Tony Blair there, where he's that by the way thing, that as soon as he just wants to change the subject, and by the way, we did such a thing. Yeah, it is by the way. You answer the question.
But they're really, he is, and I've interviewed, I do a podcast where I interview politicians. I've had Tony Blair on and interviewed Gordon Brown the other week.
Yeah.
And there are politicians that are a cut above, and you are in the presence of people that are very, very good at, frankly, finding a way, Clive, to. Yeah, and also it's moving, changing the impression with so Tony Blair's voice now, you may have noticed, is a lot drier at the back.
Yeah,
and you know, particularly when he says a word like party.
Yeah,
you know, the Labour Party now. Yeah. It's kind of got a biscuity crumbliness.
Yes, and then that's true.
Obviously, what you need with Blair is he would channel emotion.
Yeah,
you know, she was the people's princess.
Yeah.
And you just need that little, just that little squeak.
It's an actor in him. But he does, they look like giants now, don't they? Tony Blair, Gordon Brown, even the John Major, who didn't seem that impressive at the time. He's a wise old statesman.
Yeah.
But is that just, we're getting old, or I'm getting old and thinking those were better in those days, and we never like the ones who are around now. They'll, in 10 years' time, we'll be thinking about, wasn't it great when Boris was around? Well, such a wise old man in charge of things. He knew how to get those injections out.
But there is a sort of, I guess you have to give credit even to Boris Johnson for the things that they get right.
Yeah.
But I think certainly then, the reason why we're fond of perhaps some of those people is Tony Blair did win three elections.
Yes.
He was popular for a period of time. Yeah. John Major in 1992 had that sensational victory. He was prime minister for 7 years. You can't be prime minister for an extended period of time if you're not either good at it or popular. So I don't think it's unusual to like.
This is my fault. We've got to end now because I've just got you going on your great impressions. I thought, I mustn't just ask you to do your impressions, but no, yes, I will. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Cheers, Clive. Thank you, everyone. Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode of My Seven Wonders, it would be wonderful if you could rate and review us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you found us. Thank you for listening.
My Seven Wonders with Clive Anderson is a Stack production in association with Alaska TV and powered by the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.